Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
You know, people are really missing out in not seeing the video version of the Six Color Secret podcast that doesn't exist.
Is that the at the higher level of membership, like the secret level of membership we tell no one about?
Membership, but you got to find a way to pay us, and then you get access to the video chat that doesn't exist. Yeah,
that's right.
We were doing shenanigans with Zoom earlier before we started this podcast. We often start right away, but this time shenanigans with Zoom, which is such a strange program. I don't really know what it is.
It really is. I told you, I think at some point earlier this week when we were talking, that I had tried to like sign up for a paid Zoom account and like their website literally would not let me pay for it.
Yeah.
Which was just, and we just were talking about enabling features that are squirreled away in the web interface, like not in the app. You know, you have to turn something on in the web interface before you can use it in the app. And it's like, boy, there's a lot happening.
It's amazing. Well, and then there's, yeah, it was a feature that was, I go to the web app and it's not just under personal, you have to go under admin and then you have to go to advanced. And it's just, come on. It's amazing. I mean, this is the sign of a company that's got a product that is sold to businesses, isn't it?
Yep.
All the IT managers out there. I like our friend Scott McNulty. He was talking about during the pandemic, first early days, the BlueJeans software that they bought that he said was superior to Zoom and is essentially like Zoom. And I said, so you guys use BlueJeans instead of Zoom the other week. And he said, oh no, we use Zoom because people insist on using it. It was that sort of broken IT guy, right? Where it was like, we bought this thing for you, and they're like, no, we're going to use this other dumb thing. It's like,
yep,
all right, I guess you'll do it.
Especially because everybody else grew so conversant with Zoom in every other part of their life. I feel like it really had that moment, and I mean, it still is having that moment. I would argue it's become. It's fascinating to me, and we've talked about this before in regards to FaceTime. It is fascinating to me that FaceTime has been around for so long. It's a pretty good product, and I think it is the de facto, like, you want to call somebody and talk to them, but it even having had group support now for a while, it's never the de facto, let's get a group of people together, and it's weird because I will hear FaceTime used as a generic, like, hey, we could just FaceTime later or something like that. But I will also hear Zoom used as a generic, and it's almost invariably in cases where there's more than two people.
Right.
And I find that such a fascinating dichotomy because I can understand the convenience. Like, FaceTime feels very much like a phone call. You are calling somebody with video, whereas Zoom feels like a meeting that you go to. And they added the whole, like, link thing, you know, on FaceTime. I actually used it Christmas Eve because we had a couple people in our family who were not able to get together with us. And so I set a FaceTime link and I tried to set it at a specific time. And the experience for that is still kind of crappy because there's a whole thing where you can set up a meeting and people can join it ahead of time, but then you got to get in there and like you have to like tell people, like make people allowed to join even though they've clicked the link already. And then if somebody else tries to join midway through and you miss the notification, trying to find where you let them in is buried underneath a button. And I just am like, oh guys, this feels like feels like you're just almost getting it but not quite. You're just like, you're bobbling the ball here.
Yeah it's I don't know about this, but like Apple is a company that's doing a million things, and you get the impression it's got a small number of people working on FaceTime, and Zoom's entire company is based on Zoom.
Sure.
So this
it's
is
not
the problem.
A feature, it's their product. Yeah.
This is the problem with a lot of the stuff that Apple takes on. Is Apple, I think, understandably, is like, well, we're the platform owner and it's very important. And like, I get it, and that is very powerful. But and I know we've talked about this before, but like, if you're going to use the weight of being the platform owner, you know, you kind of need to do it or not do it. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. Apple sometimes does it part way, and it kind of kills all competition or much competition, and they don't actually do it. And so FaceTime is a great example where, like, I think FaceTime is a platform advantage for Apple that it should press, mm-hmm. but a lot of the new FaceTime features they did, it kind of doesn't feel like their heart's in it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even the interface to it, I find, unlike Zoom, it's very wasteful. So like I said, we did this, you know, I had my iPad out and we were doing this group FaceTime call at Christmas. And like, even on my old 10.5 inch iPad, like the video for people were these little squares in a sea of black, right? Like with like almost like pillar boxed essentially, because they're like square in a non-square screen. And I'm sitting there going like, why is there all this wasted space? Like, what else am I doing in FaceTime that you need to have, like, oh, we need to constrain people to little squares? Like, is that just a purely aesthetic decision? Because it also looks bad.
Yeah.
Whereas Zoom is like, the video fills the screen. Like, you're like, of course, that's what I'm doing. I am having a video chat with something. I'm with someone. I don't need extra space to do other stuff in. And that just feels like we don't use this, or we are trying to make ourselves look different from Zoom. But the answer is, actually, Zoom got this right, guys. Like,
I like what you said there, the idea that, well, is it an aesthetic decision because it also looks bad? It's like, no, we made it look bad as a choice.
It's a definite choice.
But
I don't know.
I think the truth is that most people's, a lot of people, not most, lots of people have Apple devices in their personal circles for one-to-ones. And for Zoom, it tends to be like businessy, and so FaceTime for one and not the other makes sense. I think I've said this before too, so forgive me for repeating it, but we do a family Zoom every other week with Lauren's family, and everybody's on an Apple device, and we use Zoom. And I still have that thought of like, we could use FaceTime for this, but we don't.
Hey, it's cross platform. You could even use you can use FaceTime.
Yeah,
if it's not
true.
Everybody on Apple devices,
but we don't.
We don't.
Same
is true for a lot of like I don't know. We did a FaceTime with some friends on New Year's Eve, and it was a Zoom. And it was actually a little weird because one of my friends has a portal, the Facebook thing.
Oh yeah.
And he was zooming on that because he was trying to show. So his son is like, I don't know, 15 months or something, and so he was trying to like have it focus in on his son while they were on a different Zoom, and it was very weird. But again, the platform aspect of it, and it made me think a little bit about this rumor of, you know, an Apple home device, right, that has a camera in it. And a screen. And I was like, you know, okay, you got center stage, that's great. But like, A, it better be able to run other video conferencing apps, because if it's just FaceTime, that's not great. But also it feels like maybe that's another opportunity to try and tweak FaceTime a little bit more and make it more attractive, because if it's built in that way and it's just like seamless to use, then you've got, again, you have a big advantage. Capitalize on it instead of being lazy about it.
I mean, my ideal version of that product, especially as somebody with an Echo Show in my kitchen, right, is I think Apple needs to leverage its app store on that product, because my frustration with the Echo is that it, you know, it's running Fire OS, but it won't run the apps, and there are apps that I want to run on it to watch video and stuff, and it's just like, no, that's not available. And I know that it runs on Fire OS, but it won't run those apps. They're locked out. They have this kind of curated list. And I think that, although that does sound like a very Apple-like thing to do, I think one of Apple's great advantages in building up any product like this is that the huge catalog of iOS apps, and to a lesser extent, tvOS apps. And if, assuming that this kind of, home kind of camera video assistant device kind of thing is from Apple, you know, you've got to use widgets, and you probably got to use TV apps or iPad apps, and it needs to be kind of an extension of some existing technology, because they've got all the pieces. But I agree with you, FaceTime as the platform owner's product will be front and center, but yeah, you should also be able to put Zoom on there or whatever. And I assume that would be the iPad version of Zoom.
Well, that's what makes me wonder is like, is this just an iPad interface, like an iPad bolted to a HomePod essentially, right?
So we were talking about this on Upgrade, and somebody wrote to me and said, why would they not just make a new mode for iPad? And it was what I responded to him was essentially that I thought that he was getting into implementation details, that I am not the person working on it, and I don't know where the bodies are buried, so I want to be bigger picture about it. I don't want to say, well, Apple, here's what you do, is you make a new mode for iPad.
Yeah.
Because it may be that they're like, no, actually what we're going to do is we're going to use tvOS as the base, and then you can fairly easily take an iOS app and make it a tvOS app, but you know, creating a kiosk mode in iPadOS would essentially be rebuilding TVOS.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're just going to use TVOS, right? So I didn't want to get into it because it's like, I don't care how they do it so much as that they do it. And when you see widget designs and you see TV apps and you see center stage, like you can put the pieces together. And I'm kind of excited about that because although the Echo Show is fine, and honestly, the best thing about it is the price. It's fine and it was cheap. Because I wouldn't have spent a lot of money to get a device with as little functionality as the Echo Show has. But an Apple product that actually would tie into the ecosystem and play videos from the same apps as my Apple TV and be an AirPlay speaker and do FaceTime. Like, yeah, okay, that's a product that I'd be interested in.
Yeah, same. I've talked about this before. I mean, the only way that it could, I think, even get a little bit better than that is if I wish there were some way to then like AirPlay it to my TV or something. I don't know. We do a D&D game with like our local friends that's now, of course, on Zoom. And I just put my MacBook on our coffee table and then I AirPlay the screen to my TV, to my Apple TV, so that we can have the map up on the big screen and Kat and I can share the camera and stuff like that. And it's good, except for the fact that because the camera is on the MacBook, but we're looking at the TV, it always feels like we're just looking above everybody.
Yep.
And I just like, this is so frustrating.
Well,
like, I wish there was just a camera I could put on my TV.
That's the other Apple product that I think that should exist. And I've wrapped it into the soundbar concept that it's like an Apple TV with a speaker and a camera, and you attach it to your TV. And then you've got all those things. You've got a video conferencing thing on your TV to talk to people. And, you know, all these other the full-on Apple TV experience, and you've got the sound experience without having to deal with the wireless sync issues that might come up when you're dealing with HomePods that are attached to an Apple TV. And you could do, now that they support CEC and audio return and stuff like that, that's already there. You plug in from your TV and other devices will play out of it. Like, it's all there too. If they want to make that product, I don't know. I mean, that product is in an esoteric category and it may be a product that they don't want to make, but it also solves the problem that I have, which is I really would like a camera attached to an Apple TV on my television that does this stuff. And I don't think they're ever going to make a thing you like hook onto the top of your TV set or something.
Yeah, exactly.
More likely the soundbar becomes like a thing where you're like, oh, I see. This is a box that has to be by the TV, and now it's all in one place, and it's attached, and it makes sense. So, like, I love the idea of that product if they ever get there. I do think that the home pod with video in the kitchen kind of thing is a more likely product. I do.
Right, yeah, and I think the one downside of that to me is that, like, I'd love to use it for something like our D&D games, but if it's in the kitchen, so like, then I do have to plug it, move it. I mean, my wish list is like, oh, what if it sits on like a MagSafe or a Qi charger and I can pick it up and move it over somewhere. But now I guess I should just use an iPad at that point.
Yeah. This is the idea here is this is someplace it lives all the time and it's got a center stage camera on it and it tracks you, but it's still going to track you in wherever it's living, that kind of place.
Yeah.
Although you could put it somewhere else. And I do think though, what the question is like, well, why isn't that just an iPad? It's like, well, they're not going to want it to be driven entirely by touch. They're going to want it to be driven by voice. And my experience with the Echo Show. It's like, it's at a distance. I can touch it. It is a touchscreen, but I don't most of the time. Like, the right. timers go off, and they're like, you can swipe up here to end the timer, and it's like, I'm not reaching over there. I'm just going to say stop and yell it several times until it finally stops, right? Because I'm not going to swipe on the touchscreen. So they need to create it an interface that can, you know, could be touched, perhaps, but at a remove, and then also everything's going to need to be bigger because you're going to be far away. You're not holding it in your hand. So it's in that way, it's again more like an Apple TV interface, which is why I keep coming to the fact back to the fact that I feel like the Apple TV is the base of a product like that, just because it solves a lot of the existing issues, even if it's not quite right. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting problem to solve, and I think it's one reason why we haven't seen this sooner, is that there are a lot of questions about, well, yeah. how do you actually end up using this kind of device? And I think, as you said, there's a lot of advantages particular to this that the Echo Show and the Google screen thing. I have one. I don't know what they call it now. They changed the name.
Nest Home point. Nest Edition.
Nest Home Hub, Homey Hub.
Google Nest Home Hub Nest Edition.
Yes, there we go. Special Edition mm-hmm. Nest Edition. I think there's a lot to be taken away from there. And it reminds me a little bit, you know, this is a little inside baseball, but back in the day when we were at Macworld, we had an iPad hooked up to a TV in the office that had all our, like, we ran that panic app status board and had things like our traffic and stuff on it, which was cool. Like, it was cool to walk by and, like, glance at this thing, and it was all run by an iPad. And, like, there is an element of that that is useful to this, which is the glanceable information. You know, the most basic information, I think, you know, as someone who sets a lot of timers using their HomePod in the kitchen, having an ability to see that would be great. Even just seeing notifications for some things would be nice if you got like a calendar event, or just having the weather there, right? Like, there's definitely stuff that is handy as glanceable information that doesn't really make sense to have an iPad out all the time, because you'd have to leave it plugged in and unlocked. It's not really designed for that. Like, you could do it, but it doesn't really work. So having a separate device that has that sort of screen context available, I think... It makes a lot of sense. I'm interested to see if they decide it's actually worth doing.
Yeah. Like all the work they did for widgets, like, it's right there. That was one of those moments where I was like, oh, right. Apps have widgets. Widgets are all about sort of like creating a non-interactive display of information. Like, that could be very useful on an ambient device. Actually kind of makes sense. And despite James Thompson's best efforts to have widgets be things that you can tap on and do a bunch of stuff, Apple's like, no, James,
right.
stop.
Right.
They're just pretty to look at, okay? So, and that works for that. So, I don't know. I made a pick in the pickies, the fake connected episode that we did. Well, real connected episode, I guess, but Ultra Universe, where I think it was Apple will release a home product, but basically I think there will be a home product. I do absolutely think that. I just don't know what one.
There's a lot. That's the thing. There are a lot of different ways that it could go. And yeah. I agree with you. I feel like we've seen those little, there are little breadcrumbs out there too. There was that talk of Home OS that popped up a couple times
right.
in job listings and stuff like that. And I think everything has been very static, it feels like, with HomePod and the Home app in the last year and a half. Like, even the addition of the HomePod Mini, like, not a lot of stuff actively changed. And it feels like that's the kind of thing that happens when they're hopefully prepping something bigger. Because it's an area that is still in hot development, it's not necessarily something where it's like, oh, yeah, we tried that, it never really worked out, and we gave up. I feel like, you know, even having the HomePod Mini stick around as the HomePod Mini...
Yeah.
A mini product for which there is no full-size product.
Exactly.
Feels very much like we're not done with this space. We just are kind of working underneath the surface on what's coming next.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like there is a strategy brewing at last for the home from Apple, and maybe we'll see it this year.
They built the sets, Jason.
They built the sets. Why would they not use? They built that home.
They did.
They got it.
Eddie Q is living in it during the entirety of lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
In the home set.
I don't know. 20th anniversary of the iMac G4 happened. It's also I don't know if anything's going to happen with this or not. Although Christina Warren was making noises about it. It's also the 15th anniversary of the iPhone launch on Sunday.
Oh, is it? Wow. Yeah, so. That's right. You're right. It's the of the announcement of it.
Yeah, of the announcement.
At Macworld Expo.
At Macworld Expo. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I did Macworld Roman very cleverly. I woke this morning to be congratulated on posting my review from back then, which was news to me because I didn't do it. Roman did it. Although I am responsible for many old Macworld reviews being in the CMS and still being accessible on the internet. That's a pro tip when you leave somewhere. They tell journalists you got to save your stuff because it'll disappear from the internet eventually. Pro tip, if you end up staying on as a columnist with access to the CMS, you can take any article you wrote in the past and just put it in and post it. And then because they own the copyright, you're not doing anything wrong. It's on their website and they own it, but then you can link to it. I did that with a few of my Mac OS X reviews too. But this was Roman at Macworld posting my old iMac G4 review. And I'm waiting for somebody to say, I can't believe you said this about the iMac G4, because I literally have no idea what's in that review. But I did write it. I'm sure I wrote it. I'll own it, whatever it was, 20 years ago when I wrote that. But I also wrote the 20 Macs for 2020 essay a year and a half ago about the iMac G4. And I have one right here. And what I learned in thinking about it more deeply in doing some research for the 20 Macs for 2020 entry is that Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive really liked this idea of having the floating LCD display, the idea that you have a flat screen, so let's float it, and we can make it super thin, and it's this dream of the super thin thing. And they specifically disparaged the idea that you just bolt a computer to the back of it. But yeah. as the panels kept getting bigger, you get the sense that Jobs and Ive looked at each other and they're like, because like there's no way that they're going to be able to build a Chrome arm big enough to hold up, nor would it be light and movable to have a 27 inch display floating up, right? So they're like, okay. And the iMac G4, as beautiful as it is, only existed for a couple of years, and then they replaced it with the iMac approach that persists to this day, because it turns out the future really was it's a screen with a computer in it that you don't see, and not a floating, you know, piece of art like the iMac G4, which it is. I think it was maybe the most beautiful Mac ever made, but it was not, like, time moved on very quickly from that period.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing I miss about it, which is something else that you and I have also discussed before, is the ergonomics.
Yeah,
which is something that the current iMacs have really fallen down on. We talked about this a little bit this week on Clockwise. Allison Sheridan brought a topic that was about like, how do you adjust your external monitors? And it's like, well, I don't have any external monitors, but I do have an iMac, and it has to go in a riser because it's too low for me otherwise. When I did have a cinnamon display, I also had to like put it on some like big thick books because it was just too low otherwise, and it wouldn't be good for my neck or my posture. So I am a little disappointed, you know, that the only way to get an adjustable like display from Apple is to pay $1,000 for that Pro Display XDR stand.
Yeah, I mean, you put it on an arm, which this is how I solved this problem. Is since I set up my home office, I've had a display and then later an iMac on an arm, and that's how I do it. Like, it's great. I recommend it.
Yeah, I that's the thing, is I consider that, but the Apple doesn't necessarily make that easier, because if you don't have a VESA compatible one to begin with, you usually can't convert it, at least for older ones.
It's right. It's complicated. The really old ones you could, and then they stopped making them convertible. The iMac Pro that I've got is convertible, and in fact, I have the foot somewhere, and when I sell this thing, I'm going to put the foot back on it. My last one was not convertible, and so I had to buy a VESA stand for it before I sold it.
Right, basically it sits on, right?
It sits on an ugly plastic stand. Yeah, exactly right.
The new, I didn't want to do that.
The new M1 iMac, my understanding is that you can swap it between the two modes as an AppleCare repair. So you have to pay Apple to do it, but they will do it. And I'm hoping that any future like iMac Pro is either that, or just you can swap it yourself and buy the adapter and just swap the parts out, because I'm kind of a believer in that.
I would do that if I had one. I've got the Retina 5K one.
Yes, and it's
not an option. Yeah, so it's like I will hope that any iMac that replaces this, which I'm hoping to do this year, will have at least make it easier to do that, because I'm intrigued by the idea of clearing up that desk space.
Yeah, I think that 24-inch M1 iMac on an arm would be great. I've never seen one in that space, but it's so light and thin. Having floating it, because this 27-inch iMac is not light and thin, but it does float above my desk, and it gives me not only all the space under the desk, which is nice, but yeah, when I go from sit to stand, I can lift it up. And actually, I've done some video, live videos and stuff where I just kind of push it to the back of my desk, and that's kind of really convenient because it's all just on the hovering arm. It's not a solution for everybody, but I like it. I'm happy that Apple is aware that it's an option for people, not just the arm too. I think they have some clients, you know, some customers in business and enterprise settings where they want to do like wall mounts, and it's the same deal, right? The VESA mount, it's a wall mount or an arm mount, either one will work, but
right.
It's nice to have it and to have it be, if not a, it's not like a native, like there's a VESA mount on the back of everyone, but you get like a little adapter that is the same color as the iMac essentially. And then you screw the mount onto that, and it works great. It really does.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
See what happens. But anyway, so happy birthday to the iMac G4. You're, you know, like, I don't know, a brief flowering of a really nice idea that, kind of couldn't bear out because everybody, the screens got bigger and people wanted bigger screens, but it sort of broke the idea of that. I do wonder every now and then, like the Microsoft Surface Studio is a little bit like the iMac G4 in the sense that it's kind of a screen above a little blob that is the computer part. And I've always wondered if Apple would ever do something like that, but it would be very weird and they would really need to be committing to the whole like touch or Apple Pencil, like drafting table kind of thing. And I'm not sure they just believe in that. I think they don't believe in it. They're like, yeah, just get an iPad. And I think they're more likely at this point, because I know I was on that train for a long time, I think they're much more likely to make a bigger iPad than they are to make a Mac that like drops down and goes into drafting table mode. They're like, if you want to do that, now buy our new 15-inch iPad that's for artists. That I just think that's more likely than they would do that, despite the fact that Surface Studio is a really interesting idea. I think maybe Apple's tried it and they're like, we don't like this. This is not the right way to do this.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. There's different takes. I'm not opposed to that.
Ideas are not necessarily ideas that when you put them in practice in a lab somewhere bear out, right? You're like, oh, this is a fun idea, and then you build it and you're like, oh no, this is actually for lots of reasons not good. And I'm willing to
accept that. Yeah, I definitely have run into that problem too, because I feel like, you know, there's things that I really want, and then I think about it and I'm like, oh, they're never going to do it that way. Like you said, the iMac G4 is a fantastic machine. I love the ergonomics of it. It's totally infeasible with the way that Apple makes its products right now. It's iMacs, right? It's just can't work. Like, it's not really an option. But, you know, doesn't mean they can't come up with other solutions, too. And looking at other products from other competitors is always a good idea.
Yep. Anything else going on? I don't know. It's early. It's quiet. It's early in the year and not a lot happening.
It's very quiet. It is. Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. Well, we'll have to talk, Jason. Next week, we're going to have to adjust our schedule.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry. Calendar has demanded it. Because next week is the annual MIT Mystery Hunt, and on Friday at noon, I will be otherwise occupied.
Thursday?
I think Thursday would work just fine.
Okay, well, I think we'd get dispensation from Calendar to
they're
to
a fan.
That.
They're a fan of puzzles. I hear, on good authority.
Calendar is a puzzle itself.
Ooh, a puzzle that none can solve.
Only time will tell. Or something. All right.
Something to add to the calendar wiki.
Well, we will be canon. We will be back next week, but maybe not when you expect us. And until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.